schools fill a big need in Philadelphia, not just for education, but for providing meals and a safe place for kids to go. So ever since schools announced they were closing due to coronavirus, city officials have been scrambling to fill those needs, even as calls for social distancing increase. Today, we're taking a look at how that process has gone one full week after the shutdown. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This is The Why. WHYY reporter Miles Bryan has been checking in at schools and rec centers, which were temporarily turned into food distribution sites. Miles, when Philadelphia schools closed, the city rolled out a plan to help families cope. What was the plan?
Right. So Philadelphia announced it was closing its schools on a Friday.
I am announcing the closure of all district schools for a two-week period from Monday, March 16th, 2020, through Friday, March 27th, 2020.
And they basically had the weekend to come up with a plan to keep their kids fed and cared for.
We're downstairs right now making those arrangements through the recreation department and all the staff trying to figure out, line up schools with rec centers.
And by Monday, they had that plan in place, and it had two parts. The first part was meal distribution at schools. So 30 schools across the city would distribute, you know, bagged breakfasts and lunches every weekday, and kids could show up at 9 a.m. and they would distribute food until about noon. The second part was rec centers. So 50 rec centers across the city would be open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. for two things. They would also distribute meals in the afternoon around 3, but they'd also be open for kids to come and hang out. Maybe kids who didn't have somewhere else to be or somewhere else to go could spend time there and be, you know, looked over by rec center workers.
And why did the city do this?
Well, since coronavirus hit the region, the mayor, Jim Kenney, he's been trying to balance the need to isolate with people's need to eat and, you know, have a safe place to be. I mean, it's worth thinking about how important a function schools serve in this city.
They get breakfast, they get lunch, they get a safe place to be, they get homework, they get knowledge, they have after school activities, and sometimes after school care. We didn't want to change all that.
A third of Philadelphia kids live in poverty. You know, a lot of them are dealing with hunger. And so the free food they get at school is really, really important.
So let's take the first part of that plan, this plan for food distribution. When things started up last Monday, how did that go?
Yeah, so I went out Monday morning to try and answer that question to see, you know, what it was like in action. And the answer was, it was pretty slow.
It's breakfast.
Pass it down, Nate. Stop being so greedy. Pass it down.
I mean, I went to McDaniel School in South Philly. And I was there, you know, right before food started being distributed at 9 a.m. And there was just a handful of older siblings with their younger siblings there to pick up bagged breakfasts and lunches.
Well, so far, those are the first seven. I know that they were giving out food.
So turnout was light across the city, at least on that first day. I do believe numbers from the district have shown that more kids have been coming out to pick up food on subsequent days.
Why do you think things were slow?
I think, you know, two reasons. I think one, at the beginning of the week, you know, we haven't been living this for that long. It's, you know, sort of the first day, and I think a lot of kids had been fed over the weekend, had stocked up shelves at their home, and maybe, you know, didn't feel the need to venture out and go back to the school that they'd just been dismissed from to get a school meal. But also, I think a lot of families just didn't know this was happening. The schools that I visited on Monday didn't really have any sign or anything to suggest that, you know, kids could go there and get something to eat.
I don't know if they know about this. We didn't have our banners out yet, but we'll be here for the next 2 weeks, this weekend.
They probably heard over the weekend that they shouldn't go there, that school was shut down. So I think initially the district just hadn't gotten the word out, you know, completely that this was a service being offered. And, you know, it takes a little bit of time for word of mouth to bubble up that, you know, you can go back and pick up food there.
Okay, so that was what was happening at schools. What about rec centers? What about that part of the plan?
Yeah, that part of the plan did not go so well. So remember, rec centers were supposed to be open from 10 a.m. to 6 for kids to hang out at. And I went to a couple that first morning. You know, the first one I went to, they were open, but there were no kids.
None came in yet.
The second one I went to by mid-morning had a big sign that said closed for an emergency staff meeting. But by the time I got to the third one, which was a little later on, the employees there told me they were not opening to kids or anybody else. They were shutting down, and it was a union issue. And so what I quickly found out was that a ton of rec center workers just didn't show up to work, didn't come into work. And I talked to one worker who didn't want me to use his name, but said we could use some tape of him speaking, who said, look, this was a safety issue for rec center workers too.
We're in close contact with kids, and even though you don't have the symptoms, it can still be carried. And this was a major concern.
You know, they've been told to be careful about being around other people, to avoid, you know, being in close quarters with groups of people. And suddenly they were being asked to, you know, supervise a whole bunch of kids in close quarters. And, you know, I think one of them said they were being asked to run a daycare and they didn't feel comfortable with that.
I'm over 50. I'm a diabetic. I had a heart attack 10 years ago. And I'm not putting myself in jeopardy.
So these workers didn't come in. A lot of rec centers weren't even able to open that first day. And pretty quickly, the city pivoted and said rec centers were going to be serving that afternoon meal from 2 to 6, but the buildings would not be open to kids. They wouldn't be open to anyone but staff.
So they made the switch. What happened? How did it go?
Yeah, I spent some time at a couple of rec centers in my neighborhood in South Philly to try and answer that question. And the experience just really varied by where you were. You know, I went to a couple of rec centers where they had food on offer. It was around 3 p.m. Maybe kids were getting hungry after lunch a few hours earlier. That had seen nobody, that had tons of meals that were sitting on a table to give away that just nobody was interested in picking up. And the workers were kind of scratching their heads about where the kids are. But then I went to another one. I went to Murphy Rec Center that had given away, you know, dozens and dozens of meals that morning. And by the time I got there, there was only one lunch left, you know, one lone lunch sitting on the table outside. So I was hanging out at that table with the one lunch waiting to see if anybody would show up. And I did run into this grandmother in the neighborhood, Yvonne Wilkerson.
I live exactly one block and a half from here.
She said she had a couple of grandkids and a couple of great-grandkids at home. And, you know, she had come to pick up some lunches, and she had also come with some bags to give to the workers.
So every day they didn't have them bags, I was going to give them bags. I was going to leave them with bags to give people if they didn't have any.
So that other families who showed up could, you know, take a bundle of meals more easily.
Yeah, for them to take the food home.
So there was this sort of sweet moment where she, you know, was there to look out for her family and her kids and grandkids, but also look out for her community. You know, and I asked the worker there why he thought they had been so much more successful at, you know, getting these meals out into the community. And he said, you know, he lived a block away and he knows everybody in the neighborhood, and he's just been really pushing to get the word out that this is, you know, a place where families and kids can come to get something to eat.
Yesterday there was hardly anyone, but then I just told like maybe three people, you know, and man, it just like people just started coming like crazy. You know what I mean? So
that was where things stood in the middle of last week. What's the plan now?
Right, so starting today, the plan has changed. Rec centers will no longer give out any meals or be part of this at all. Instead, the city will provide families packages of 3 breakfasts and 3 lunches per student at about 50 district schools throughout Philly, as well as a number of charter schools, and just on Mondays and Thursdays from 9 a.m. to noon. So they're cutting back the amount of days that they're serving, but providing more food to each family when they come pick it up. In addition, 6 Philadelphia Housing Authority locations will offer breakfast and lunch Monday through Thursday. And there'll be 3 centers for older adults that will provide pickup meals for seniors Monday through Friday from 11 to 1, which is interesting. It looks like they're addressing, you know, some of what I was hearing when I was out reporting, that families were picking up food, extra food for their elderly neighbors.
Why did the city stop distributing food at rec centers?
Yeah, you know, there wasn't a why given when an official spoke on these changes on Friday. But I think, you know, my reporting showed that, you know, turnout for food at rec centers was really uneven throughout the city. And I think that combined with the fact that there'd been some pushback from rec center workers who maybe didn't want to be involved with this, were nervous about being around groups of kids, you know, meant that the city took a look and said, we're going to, you know, scale back here and just focus on schools and focus on giving kids and families a lot of food at once so they don't have to be out and about and potentially, you know, interacting with other people.
You know, a lot of government functions have been trying to figure out how to deal with coronavirus in whatever particular way they needed to.
Right.
Does it seem like this was just a process of the city trying to figure out, you know, the best way to do this?
Yeah, I mean, we're in such a strange time. If I was on the show talking about, you know, the school district rollout of some new meal distribution plan 3 weeks ago, I think I might feel more critical about some of these issues that have come up, the staffing problems, the last minute changes. But I think, you know, these are good people trying their best to provide services to the community and to make sure the folks, you know, they care about are cared for, and just doing as much as they can or adapting as quick as they can to these circumstances that just keep changing. You know, I think the district, like everybody else right now, is just trying to keep up with the changes and do what they can for these kids and families and for people in the community.
Thank you, Miles.
Thank you.
Miles Bryan reporting for WHYY. When we come back,
we can't let vulnerable students fall further and further behind.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Benyakov. We've been talking about how Philadelphia has been trying to fill the needs of families for things like free meals and childcare, given that schools have been closed due to the coronavirus pandemic. WHYY reporter Avi Wolfman-Arend has been looking at what the closure means for kids' education. Avi, this pandemic essentially means a lot of kids are suddenly being homeschooled. District-wide, how has the school district offered academic support to families?
So what the school district has done at the administrative, like the higher-up level, is essentially create an online resource where parents can go and find grade-level content for their kids, you know, with the expectation that they would teach it to them, right? So basically almost like guided homeschooling, saying like, hey, if you got a sixth grader, this is the type of social studies stuff they could or should be working on. The district as a whole has not provided like a comprehensive online virtual schooling product for families or for like students to log into. It's more patchwork than that.
Yeah, so my son, who's in fourth grade, we've basically been sent links to the fourth grade curriculum and then some links to some online education tools.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty standard from what I can tell. But there were some teachers and some schools that were trying to do more, especially like in the high school, middle school levels, because there are some schools in Philadelphia where most or all students have access to Chromebooks or some form of technology. One of those schools is an experimental school called the U School, and Charlie McGeehan is a teacher there.
I mainly teach 12th graders this year, and so what I was planning to do was to like move ahead into the final stages of their senior project. We do like a multi-part senior project that they present in the middle of May, and that's generally due around that time.
So he was planning to do kind of like remote instruction and guidance for that project. He actually, on Wednesday, had an online class meeting. They were going to use a Google program to meet up around 2 o'clock, you know, almost like a class, like not actually a class, but almost like a class.
But I've since canceled that, and I don't really feel like I can move the senior project work ahead while we're out.
Why did he cancel?
So the night before, the school district had issued a letter to principals. And it's a pretty short letter. It was from a couple of high-ranking administrators with the school district. And in part, it said, quote, "To ensure equity, remote instruction should not be provided to students, including through the internet, technology at home, by phone, or otherwise."
Hmm. Why would that be? I mean, isn't working remotely a good way for kids to kind of keep up with schoolwork during the closure?
Yeah, you would think, right? You would try to be encouraging this type of behavior. But what the school district said is that it had gotten guidance itself from the state, Department of Education, and the federal Department of Education saying they could not offer remote instruction to some students unless they could provide it for all students. So basically they were saying, like, this is an equity concern. And in a city like Philadelphia, there are certainly students, we don't know exactly how many, but there are certainly some students who would have either uneven or no access to high-speed internet, who may not have a computer at home or a tablet, and because the libraries and rec centers are closed, might not have a place to go to log on to a computer, right? But I would say more than just there's a broader sort of theoretical equity problem, there's also very crucially a potential legal snag here, which is that under federal law, all schools are mandated to meet the individual needs of special education students. If we just let every school and every teacher decide whether or not they want to do, you know, graded content work with their students, we don't know if what they're doing is going to be in alignment with each student's IEP, their individual education plan. That's what that term IEP means. And if you offer instruction but don't meet those requirements, you could be opening yourself up to lawsuits.
So the things that my son's teacher's done, like sending work packets and sending these links to online tools, does the district think that's okay for them to keep doing?
So it seems like the district does think that's okay now. So when this letter first went out, there was a lot of confusion. And later, the superintendent, William Height, clarified and said, no, we didn't mean you can't do any remote instruction.
We are not prohibiting teachers from reaching out to their students, to the students' families, to provide activities or resources for those young people to engage in. The one thing that we are prohibiting, however, is a requirement to log in, is a requirement to take attendance, and is a requirement to distribute grades.
So you can give enrichment activities, right? You can link to resources, you can stay in touch with students, but you can't do something that really closely approximates instruction. And I will say that after Philadelphia clarified that, what I found is that a lot of school districts are doing this middle ground approach right now because they're also worried about lawsuits regarding or surrounding special education.
What was people's reaction when the school district kind of drew this line, when they said you can help out students, but you can't do online instruction, you can't go to these lengths?
So it was mixed. There were some folks who were saying this is ridiculous, right? Like, you should do as much as you can possibly do for students. Just because you can't do it for every student doesn't mean you should do it for no students. And other folks were saying, no, these are real equity concerns. We can't let vulnerable students fall further and further behind. You know, I think Charlie, the teacher at the U school, felt like, hey, I don't know what the legalities of all of this are. Obviously, my impulse as a teacher is I want to keep teaching. I want to do as much as I can for my students.
I did want to keep the instruction going for, you know, students who need something to do so that if we're back in school in May, they have a good, relatively complete senior project to present. But now I feel like I can't even do that. That feels a little tough to me.
I also talked to Robin Lake, who is the director of the Center on Reinventing Public Education at the University of Washington. And she had been actually sort of ahead of the curve on this because some of the first school districts to close were out in the Seattle area.
Yeah, we're, I guess, the epicenter.
And she had actually chronicled how one school district out there had put together this entire, you know, virtual education program and then done the pivot back.
Our state chief put out some guidance advising districts to wait and go cautiously into this online environment.
And she thinks that's unfortunate. She thinks this is an extraordinary time. School districts need the flexibility to sort of move forward and do what they can. And that, you know, ultimately, right, if the concern is equity, that if you offer no instruction or limited instruction, you're going to end up with more inequitable outcomes because the families that have the wherewithal and the resources to use whatever you provide are going to allow their children to, you know, continue to progress, while those who don't have guardians in that position, right, are going to see their kids fall further and further behind.
So we've just got to figure this out. We've got to figure out how to serve all kids, absolutely, but we can't stand still in the meantime.
Avi, it seems like schools have been really struggling to figure out how to deal with this situation. We talked to Miles Bryan earlier in the episode, and they had a plan to offer kids meals that got off to a very rocky start. And now it seems like the plan to give kids some academic support has been difficult as well. Is this just especially a problem for Philly schools?
Yeah, well, I think it's tough in a big city like Philadelphia to just all of a sudden one day suck schools out of the equation, because schools do a lot in a city like Philly. I mean, they provide meals, they provide care, they provide all sorts of, you know, field leveling services for hundreds of thousands of families. Philadelphia is not a small homogeneous school district. There are people of all sorts of racial backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, and it is infamously the poorest big city in America, right? And so there are lots of access issues. So it's hard to craft solutions like this on the fly. We're finding that out, and I think people could have guessed that going in. It's just now we're seeing where the particular problems are popping up and where they need to be addressed.
Thanks, Avi.
Thanks, Shai.
Avi Wolfman-Arend is WHYY's education reporter. Just before we released this episode, the U.S. Department of Education released a fact sheet that said ensuring compliance with federal laws, quote, should not prevent any school from offering educational programs through distance instruction, end quote. It's not clear how Pennsylvania's Department of Education and districts like Philadelphia will respond. So far, its guidance hasn't changed. We know a lot of you have been dealing with your children being out of school, lining up childcare, figuring out how to homeschool them. We'd love to hear your experience. Give me a shout. I'm on Twitter at Shai Ben Yaakov. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. We had editing help on this episode from Eugene San. Our intern is Kelly Brennan. I'm Shai Ben Yaakov. See you tomorrow.